And welcome once again to another edition of A Plain Answer here at Redeemer Broadcasting. I'm Dan Elmendorf. Joining me on the Zoom line today is our good friend, Pastor Al Baker. Pastor Al, welcome.
Thank you, Dan. It's good to be with you again, and looking forward to it.
There are certain people in my life who kind of give me direction and are settled in their pastoral input. And I'll be honest, they're not really young people. they're more seasoned, wise, and have gone through the battles of life and come out loving the Lord. And you're one of those guys. So, Pastor Al, I really appreciate you joining us today. Our church is looking for a pastor. I think I've mentioned it on the air before. But it's not easy finding a good senior pastor. You know, we're a confessional church, Pastor Al. We hold to the Westminster standards, and we're looking for someone to fill that. But he also has to do a bunch of things. So, Pastor, can you give us an idea of what the church should be looking for? You're in basically our tradition, not exactly the same denomination, but close enough, as they say, close enough for government work. So, Pastor Al, take it away.
Well, I think there's several things. First of all, I think a man in the ministry has to be truly called to that work, because it's a very difficult work. It can be a lonely work. There's lots of discouragement in it. And when I've had young men come to me who were in my church, various churches over the years, and say, Al, I think I'm called to the ministry. What do you think? And I half jokingly say, let me try to talk you out of that. And what I mean by that
is, I understand, believe me.
Yeah, if you are not truly called by God, sooner or later, you're going to have great hardship and great discouragement. And if you doubt your call, you will quit.
Yes.
It's just too difficult. And every man I've ever known in the ministry whom God has used has suffered in various ways.
Yes.
So it's a difficult task. I think that beyond that, I think that humility is very important. Obviously, the Westminster standards for those in our tradition is very important, and because we believe that the Westminster Confession does the best job of putting forth the scriptures and what they teach, and so every church, whether it has a written confession of faith or not, has a theological system.
Yeah, that's true.
And so you want to make sure that you get a man, and by the way, it needs to be a man. Because Paul in 1 Timothy 3 and Titus 1 makes clear that men are to be ministers of the gospel, and not all men. There's certain qualifications that those men must have. But I think it must begin with godly character, humility amongst the most important, and of course, adherence to your theological standards is vital. But again, above and beyond that, there's got to be godly character.
Hmm. That's really good advice right up front here. Yeah. I imagine some churches are going through the same thing that our particular church is going through. And what about for the people at a high level? How do they maintain a confidence in God and a peace with the brethren?
Well, I think that, I think, first of all, If you have what some churches call a pulpit nominating committee, that's a really difficult job. It can be very time consuming. It can be discouraging to the pulpit committee because they do a lot of work. They find a man that they think might be a good fit. He doesn't want to be considered for the position, and there they are back to square one, so to speak.
Yeah.
So it can be very difficult, but when I left the last church I was a pastor of in Connecticut, and of course you came there and worshiped with us on numerous occasions, that was the most amazing church and our favorite church we ever we ever served. And it was a church plant, and so a church plant's a little different than a church that's been around for, you know, 50 years or more.
Yeah.
But I told the people, I said, now, here's the temptation every church has, every pulpit committee. They know the strengths of their previous pastor, and let's say they're very, very thankful for him and very thankful for his ministry. Maybe it was a long ministry. But every pastor has weaknesses. And so the tendency for pulpit committees is to look at the weaknesses of the pastor, even though they loved him, and to say, you know, we need to make sure that the next man we get is strong in the areas where our previous pastor was weak. Now, that sounds good, but here's the problem. Most churches, most of the people in churches, particularly church plants or churches that are fairly young, are at that church at least to some degree, maybe a large degree, because of the pastor.
Mm-hmm.
They like his ministry. They like the way he preaches. They like the way he shepherds and so forth. And so when churches decide, oh, we need to get a man who's very different than the man we had before, then it usually doesn't work out very well because the people are saying, well, we like the way he did ministry. And so that's a mistake a lot of churches make. And so, again, you know the weaknesses of the man who was there before, and you want to do the best you can to mitigate those weaknesses of the next man, but you can't get a guy that's completely different.
No.
That's a mistake. And so I think that the church, the pulpit committee, needs to be very careful, or the officers, whoever is doing the search, and just be patient and believe that God has a man. And sometimes it takes a long time. I think usually in our tradition, it could take a year, 2 years.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
So you just have to be patient.
I'm bracing myself. You know, if it takes 2 or 3 years, so be it. It's not going to rattle me terribly. But the main thing is we find the right man that the Lord has for us. Today we're talking with Pastor Al Baker. And Pastor Al, we've known you for a long time. You've written some books. Which book have you written that you would recommend people get a hold of and read?
I would say probably Revival Prayer. A Needed Paradigm Shift in Today's Church. That was one I wrote. I think that was the second book I wrote, maybe 15 years ago. And I think that's the one that's been the most popular. And I think it's because we all know we need prayer.
Yeah.
If there's two things that are lacking in a church, it's almost always a lack of evangelism and a lack of prayer.
Mm.
And yeah. I think we instinctively know that prayer is vital. But a lot of us just don't put forth the effort in the discipline of prayer. And prayer is a hard thing to do, especially by yourself.
Yes, it is.
You know, your mind starts thinking about things you've got to do that day. You completely forgot about prayer, or you're tired and you fall asleep in prayer. We've all done that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think personal prayer is important, but also praying in a group. But I would say that book is the most important, because I talk about the 10 marks of a revival culture. I talk about what the characteristics of revival prayer. Talk about the intolerable burden that we all must have if we're going to pray earnestly. So I think that's probably the one I would recommend.
Yeah. The Lord has directed you into evangelism in your life work, and I can't imagine that it's easy, but it is fulfilling, I think. The Lord does that with the gifts that he gives. He makes it so we like the area that he's plopped us into. You mentioned how that prayer is important, and you also mentioned that evangelism is important. What if you have a church that's not doing too much on the evangelism side? What are maybe a first step it can take to kind of recover that?
I would say the first thing that a church should do is ask God to bring them an evangelist. Now, I'm not suggesting that it has to be an ordained man. Mm-hmm. I'm not suggesting that you pay a salary, because a lot of churches are small and they really couldn't afford two salaries. So that's mm-hmm. not what I'm saying. But I'm saying that there are different gifts. And most pastors know they should do the work of an evangelist. Paul told Timothy that.
Sure.
But most pastors are not really gifted evangelists. There are some exceptions. I know a few. And I think that was true of me. When I was a pastor. It doesn't mean that a pastor with an evangelistic gift is better than anybody else. Not at all. Mm-hmm. It's just a different distribution of gifts by the sovereign God. So I tell churches all the time, ask God to bring you a man who has an evangelistic gift. And he very well may be a layman. He may be an elder or deacon in the church. And what that'll do is he will be able to stir up interest. There will be a few people, not usually a lot, but there will be maybe 10% of the congregation who will really latch on to that.
Mm-hmm.
And want to be involved in evangelism. And there's a lot of different ways to do it. The way that I always recommend for churches to do at the beginning is to learn to pass out gospel tracts and go to a park and walk around and ask God to give you opportunity to pass out gospel tracts to people. Mm-hmm. And I think from there you can move on to door-to-door evangelism, and that terrifies a lot of people. But there are people who enjoy doing that. I just went out yesterday with a few guys. I'm going out again tomorrow. And when I do that, I always pray for God to give me one good contact. And it always happens. It happened yesterday. And a lot of times now people will not answer the door. They know you're there. They won't answer the door. And they've got that little ring camera, so they see it. They don't want to come to the door. And that's okay. But at the same time, I'm looking for one person.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, when you used to get these phone calls about these marketing guys. They'd call you and they'd ask you to buy this or that. And, they know it's a numbers game. They might dial the phone 1,000 times a day. They're looking for 10 people. 10 suckers, I guess you might say, who will buy whatever it is they're selling.
Yeah.
And they know it's a numbers game. And so it is with evangelism. There are people that God has prepared to listen to you. But again, I think you've got to have an evangelist who can lead something like that, because most people are just afraid of it.
Mm-hmm.
And they feel overwhelmed. They feel guilty. And I tell pastors all the time, if you don't have an evangelistic gift, don't feel guilty about it. Now, yes, I always tell pastors, you should go out at least for an hour every week and evangelize somewhere. Mm. Find you a fishing hole and go every week for an hour. And what that'll keep you in the game. That'll keep you out of your ivory tower. It'll keep you right down where people are. You're going to run into some people with some serious problems. And you got to give an opportunity to minister to them. But there are God will raise up people in your church who are evangelists. And by the way, there can be women evangelists. I don't mean an office of evangelists, but there are plenty of women who are really, really strong evangelists. And I always encourage people to get them involved.
Yeah, absolutely. And today we're talking with Pastor Al Baker, a friend of the ministry, someone I look to for advice and encouragement. Pastor Al, you often have trips, and sometimes you can't really talk about them in detail, but what is God doing in this big world of ours, and how is he using you?
Well, I do have a trip coming up in a few weeks, and I think I can say where I'm going. I'm going to Sri Lanka.
Wow.
It used to be called Ceylon, which is right off the coast of India. And we're starting churches there. We've got a church planting movement in a number of different countries, some of which I can't mention.
No.
God's just doing an amazing work in this part of the world. I'm taking a long flight. I'm taking a flight from Atlanta to Seoul, Korea, which is 15 hours. And then I fly to Bangkok, which is another 5 hours. Spend the night there, and then I fly the next morning to Sri Lanka.
Wow.
And I'm not sure how long that is, but it's you know, at least 3 or 4 hours, I guess. But we're there to train people, and I'll be training these people on how to plant churches.
Wow.
And then from there, we're going to go in the other direction, back, I guess it would be east, to Myanmar. And I was there last November, and so we're going back there as well and continue. We've begun a church planting work there. We're going to continue training these people as well.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So there's just a lot of there's other places I'm going. I'm going in August. This will be a fun trip. I'm going to take a bunch of college baseball players to the Dominican Republic, and we're going to teach them how to share the gospel.
Oh.
We're going to play games against some of their national teams, and these guys are really good down there.
Well, you yourself used to be in baseball, I believe.
Yes, that's right. I played college baseball. That was a long time ago. The game's changed. They're much better than we were back then. But it's fun, and I've got 8 grandsons, and 9 grandsons, actually, and eight of them playing baseball. So it's kind of fun. We have a lot of fun watching them play.
That's beautiful. How about the family time? How can you get all done and still have adequate time for your family, Pastor Al?
Yeah, I think that a pastor, on the one hand, it's an advantage. He's usually in control of his own schedule.
Mm-hmm.
And so when our kids were little, I would a lot of times have early morning meetings. And so I'd be gone from the house at 6 a.m. 3 or 4 days a week. But and then I might be out at night. But what I would do is I would come home about 3:30 in the afternoon when they were little, and we'd play baseball in the front yard.
Mm.
Put on their little uniforms. They'd line off the field, you know. And then, you know, I'd play with them for a couple hours. We'd go and eat dinner, then I was gone again.
Wow.
And I think again, we would bring our kids with us as much as we could. You know, when
yes.
they were little, for example, we would go to abortion clinics, and we would picket abortion clinics in downtown Atlanta when we lived in the Atlanta area, and we'd take our kids with us. Now, they were not in any danger because, you know, we would make sure they weren't in danger, but we would take them with us, and we had we worked with Chuck Colson's ministry,
yes,
prison fellowship, and we had prisoners stay with us, three or four different prisoners for 2 weeks at a time. A couple of them came to know the Lord through that.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were always around. We always brought them around people, and I think that was a great blessing as well. But again, I think a pastor has to maintain his devotional life. He has to lead his family. And I think he needs to do his best to take a day off where he doesn't do any ministry at all. I usually try to do that on Fridays, but again, some men like to do it on a Monday or whatever. But you just have to be in control of your schedule the best you can, and at the same time, be open to people. That's why I said a moment ago, it's a hard job. Very difficult.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. And did you find that when you were in the pastor part of it, that there was only a small minority of people that drove a lot of time in terms of how much input from you they sucked up?
Yeah, I remember reading a book years ago by Gordon MacDonald, and he referred to VDPs, very draining people. And
yep.
Unfortunately, every church I've ever been in has people like that.
Yes.
And you want to do your best to minister to them, but at the same time, you have to graciously, but at the same time very deliberately, limit their time to you.
Yes.
And my experience has been a lot of times these are very needy people, and maybe they really do have some hard things that have happened in their life. But, you know, there's the tendency to think that you, that is the pastor or the elder, are really their savior. And we're not. We can point them to the savior. And sometimes, more times than not, my experience has been that you really can never please these people. And eventually they will come at you.
Yes.
And cause you trouble. I remember there was a woman in our church that was an alcoholic, and we tried to minister to her. And she had two teenage daughters. We tried to minister to them. And she would periodically call our house, and my wife would answer the phone, and the woman would begin to say, "You're the worst pastor's wife I've ever seen in my life."
That poor woman. I mean, your wife.
Know, she was drunk when she was doing that. And one time, she called me, and she had taken a bunch of pills, and I went to her apartment. I literally picked her up and put her in my car and took her to the hospital and saved her life. And every now and then, this was 40 years ago, every now and then I'll get a text from her and she said, "You're the lousiest pastor I've ever had in my life."
You saved her life.
Yeah, you can't make this stuff up.
No, it's hilarious. Oh, my goodness. Oh, dear. You could write a book about that one.
Yeah.
Today we're talking with Pastor Al Baker. The subject is, what do you do? How does a church cope with seeking a replacement senior pastor? You know, we had a case where our pastor moved on, you know, to another area of the country. And we're looking for a pastor, and it's not easy. We do have a pulpit committee or search committee, whatever you want to call it, and you know, they just pour through those papers and applications and listen to sermons, and they think they're close, and then somebody will raise an issue, and then you'll have to drop that name, and you think there's a lot of applicants, but you parse them, and then you end up with nothing. Or if you get one that's really good and you think, oh, there's a good one, then the pastor himself backs out. So it's not an easy task, and you just got to get used to the timing of the Lord is not easy in such cases. You want to do what's right, but anyway, it's hard on that search committee for sure. Pastor Al, we've got 2 minutes left, 2 or 3 minutes left, maybe some summary thoughts that come into your mind for that church and its people that are looking for a pastor.
Well, I would say that you all want to pray, and when you're searching for the pastor, you really have to, and it's, again, it's very difficult work, but you have to vet the pastor. And what I, of course, mean by that is look into his character and try to find out the best you can about his past. No, nobody's perfect, of course, but I remember hearing a story of a man that a church was looking at, and one of the elders had some concern about the man, and he actually tried to talk to elders from the previous church, and nobody would talk to him. He felt that was suspicious, but they went ahead and called the man anyway, and it was a disaster.
Yes.
And so, you know, You just have to look at the past again. Nobody's perfect.
No.
But I think above and beyond, there's, you know, God gives the gifts, and they're not distributed equally. Some men are really gifted preachers.
It's true.
Some men are really gifted pastors. And yes, of course, everybody wants a really, really good preacher. But he should be theologically sound. But you know what? You may not be able to get a really good preacher, but you get a good pastor.
Yes.
And that's so vital, because all of us are going to have trouble of some sort, deaths in the family, some kind of tragedy. And you need a man who will really care for you and care for your family and love you, love your children, and be there for you in time of need. And so I think godly character, humility, the fruit of the Spirit are all very, very important. You know, men can learn how to be more effective preachers, but character is a long-term thing that's very, very important. I would urge y'all to just be patient and wait on the right man and trust God to bring him in due time.
Yes. Yeah, it's all of God. It's easy to say that, but it really, truly is. When finally he gives us a new pastor, we'll look back and say, oh, that's what the Lord was doing.
That's right.
Pastor That's right. Al Baker, my brother, if someone would like to get a hold of you or read your writings, where can they go?
Well, they can go to Forget None of His Benefits. They can Google that. My name will pop up there. I'm happy to receive emails from people. It's al.baker, al.baker, 1952 at gmail.com. They can certainly email me. I'm happy to speak with anybody anytime.
That's beautiful. And it has the feel that maybe you're about 3 years older than me based on your ID.
That's about right, yeah.
Pastor Al, our brother in the Lord, God bless you. Keep doing what you're doing. Don't give up. And give your wife a hug.
Thank you, Dan. Appreciate it so much. God bless you as well.
Dear listener, please join us next week for another edition of A Plain Answer.